You're listening to Unexpecting, the podcast bringing you real conversations from those of us who have suffered pregnancy and infant loss. With comfort and hope for the future, I'm your host, Ashley Bitterman. Today I'm talking to Jackie, who lost her infant son Richard at nearly 35 weeks after he suffered a fetal maternal hemorrhage. Her story details the beautiful ways she's honoring her son and how she's using her experience to help give a voice to others navigating similar situations. Hey, Jackie, I am so thrilled to be talking with you today and grateful that you are here and willing to share your story.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Okay, so let's start with one, two, three. So what is one thing you cannot live without? Two of your all-time favorite movies, and three celebrities you'd want to have dinner with.
All right. The one thing I cannot live without would be ice cream. That is my go-to for everything.
What flavor?
I don't know. I think pistachio might be my favorite.
Interesting. Okay. I feel like that's not a popular answer.
No, and the Ben and Jerry's pistachio flavor is okay. On point. So that is like, if I'm sad, I will eat ice cream. If I'm happy, I'll eat ice cream. That's like my go-to.
Secure all.
Let's see, two movies. All right, I'm going to go old school. 10 Things I Hate About You.
Oh, yes.
It's just a classic.
Yes.
And Almost Famous.
Wow. Okay. I've seen that movie once and it's not nearly enough times. I haven't seen it in probably, I don't know, 10 years. I don't even know when it came out. I need to watch it again. Great choices.
Love All right. And then three celebrities. I have to say Gwen Stefani. Ooh. I have been obsessed with her and No Doubt since I was 9. So yeah, she's definitely like my icon, and somehow she is incredibly ageless.
I don't understand.
Phenomenal.
She has looked the same since I knew who she was.
Yeah, it's unfair.
No, I don't get it.
And then I would say Kristen Bell. She just seems like she'd be so much fun.
So fun. Yes.
And then Chrissy Teigen. So I know, like, I always found her funny, but then when she lost her son Jack, it was like a whole different connection. And I really like how, even though, you know, time has passed, she's still talking about him and using her platform to, you know, help to shatter the stigmas around everything. And she doesn't seem to care that people criticize her for it, and I like that.
Yeah, she is so real. She's truly like real. I feel like I get her more so than you get other celebrities who are putting stuff out there that you know is not all them. Like, she is not afraid to show the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that's very inspiring. I'm also a big follower of her.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you are a high school teacher.
Yeah.
I come from a family of teachers. My grandma was a teacher, my mom, my sister. What made you want to get into teaching?
So I decided I wanted to go into teaching when I was a high school student. Mm-hmm. And I had just phenomenal English teachers, specifically my junior and senior years, just very enthusiastic teachers that love literature, but also wanted to share that love with their students. And I found it really inspiring. So I am actually in my 12th year of teaching now. Wow. So I teach English and ESL, which is English as a second language.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, that's so nice. And it's such, I mean, I feel like teachers have been highlighted more now than they have, but still never enough for the impact that they have on everyone.
Yeah, I think you could say that 1,000 times.
Well, thank you for giving back the way that you do. You are very valued in my eyes and thousands, millions of people's eyes, but hopefully more and more and more and more.
Thank you.
So shifting gears, you've been pregnant quite a few times.
Yeah.
Tell me about your very first pregnancy, you know, finding out you're pregnant for the first time, what that was all like.
Yeah. So my husband and I have been together for actually almost 20 years now. We are high school sweethearts.
Oh, I love that.
And he always knew he wanted to be a dad and have a family. And the thought was really scary to me. Mm-hmm. I felt like I had to check things off of like my life list before we went to that step.
Yep.
So I finished my master's degree and I felt like I was pretty well into my career. I was ready. So we got pregnant actually pretty quickly and found out right around his birthday. And, you know, I told him and it was just complete shock, but immediately we started making plans. We told our parents and then we started figuring, okay, this is when the due date will be. And a couple of my friends actually were pregnant right around the same time.
Oh.
And I was like, this is perfect. This is just, I'm not alone going through this. It was just so exciting. And then the first ultrasound at 8 weeks, they were like, you know, your dates might be off. You're not measuring 8 weeks and the heart rate's a little bit slow. So, you know, we think everything might be okay, but we're going to do a follow-up ultrasound next week.
Okay.
So.
And how did you feel hearing that? I mean, this is the first time you're pregnant, so you don't know what's normal yet. Was that scary to hear or did it seem like routine?
Well, so I have anxiety, so it was terrifying. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, I went to Dr. Google and tried looking up everything possible, which is a terrible, terrible idea. And, you know, my husband is the complete opposite of me. He's calm and he's like, you know, just trust the doctors, go along with it. I'm sure things are fine. So I tried my best to stay calm. We did the follow-up ultrasound and the baby had died. Mm. So we had a missed miscarriage. The language I remember the doctor telling me was that the pregnancy was no longer viable. And I remember thinking, what does that mean?
Right.
Like, it's just so clinical. And I was thinking, I'm growing a baby. What do you mean, like, not viable? You know, and then immediately talking about my options.
Ugh.
And it was just really hard to comprehend what was happening.
Wow.
And yeah. A missed miscarriage it was nothing like I had thought miscarriage would be. I expected pain and bleeding and things to happen really quickly. But it was like my body never got the message. I still had a lot of bloating. I still had pregnancy symptoms, the nausea. And my students at this point, I hadn't told them, but I'm really petite and they knew that like I was wearing more billowy clothes.
Yeah.
And I know that they were whispering about it. And I had to wait about a week before I could have my D&E, my surgery after. So I had to return to work. Knowing what was happening, I feel like I blocked out like that time in my memory because I don't remember a whole lot in that week span.
That is so difficult. That's a long time to have to wait with a non-viable pregnancy still part of your body.
Yes. Even just saying it now, and this was in 2014, it still feels like I don't know how I did it. I mean, I just returned to work. And at that point, I was a brand new hire at my school. So I didn't want to take any sick days. And I hadn't told anyone. So I just returned to work like nothing had happened.
Wow. So not only are you going through this physically, mentally, but you also have to deal with hiding it and not being able to show your true emotions or be able to respond the way that you maybe needed to be able to because you're at work and you're just expected to do your day-to-day job.
Yes. And what was really embarrassing is that this was right before Thanksgiving break. And my students were very excited for break. They weren't listening very well, just typical excitement that normally would not bother me at all.
Yep.
I burst into tears in front of the whole class. And they were shocked because it was an unusual response for me. And then obviously, and then they thought that they had made me cry because they didn't know what was going on.
Right.
So I ended up just grabbing another staff member to watch my class while I got to the bathroom to kind of like calm down and regroup. But yeah, it was just that was like the grief process really bubbling to the surface because I wasn't handling it.
That's so difficult to go through and deal with so many mixed emotions at the same time. And then a week later you have your DNE. What was that experience like for you?
It ended up being an outpatient procedure, and my OB did the surgery, which was nice because it was someone that I knew. Mm-hmm. And everyone was wonderful. I mean, they were so nice and as sensitive as I needed. So that was, it ended up being, I guess, as comforting as it could be in that moment.
Right.
And then, yeah, I'd only taken that day off from work just for the surgery. I actually went back the very next day.
Wow.
And yeah, I just remember sitting on the couch and just crying and drinking tea like all day long.
And were you given any type of diagnosis for why that pregnancy ended?
So the theory, and there's no definitive way to tell what really happened, but because it was a missed miscarriage and my thyroid, I ended up having an undiagnosed hypothyroidism. So I have an underactive thyroid.
Okay.
Which, yeah. So then I end up not producing enough progesterone early in pregnancy for the baby. So that is the theory.
Okay.
So I got, I started seeing an endocrinologist. I got my thyroid under control. And for my next pregnancies, it ended up being monthly. I had blood drawn and my thyroid was managed.
Okay.
So, and I ended up taking a lot of extra progesterone for each first trimester.
Okay. So at least you kind of knew there was an answer at least you could look to. And now you knew this moving forward so that you can take any preventative measures that you needed to for any future pregnancies.
Yeah. And that's, I do want to say for anyone listening, I mean, that I'm definitely a black and white person. I like to find an answer for everything and I like to have control. And losing control with the miscarriage, I feel like it drove me to a really unhealthy state of mind because I wanted to find an answer. I can't tell you how many doctor's appointments I went to, how many different tests I had done. I mean, it was definitely extreme, and it's because I wanted an answer. And that's where I sort of found one, but I mean, most miscarriages, they don't have an answer or a reason. It's just terrible.
Yeah, it is. And you know what I think is so interesting is I'm listening to you talking and telling me about how you just had to go back to work and you're a new employee. And we have this quote unquote rule that you don't tell people you're pregnant until 12 weeks. And, you know, I also didn't tell. I mean, I think that's just, it's like an unwritten rule. And I also think it's just really interesting because most miscarriages happen in the first trimester. And I'm struggling with understanding the reason behind this rule, because when you do go through a miscarriage, it is a devastating loss. It's not just something that you should be able to pick yourself up and go to work because you weren't supposed to say anything. I mean, it is a loss. And, you know, I wonder what your thoughts are on this unwritten rule of don't tell anyone because something might happen, rather than tell everyone, because if it happens, you need to have that space to grieve. You need to give yourself that outlet for support. And we don't do that now.
That's such a good point, because I wish I told everyone. Mm-hmm. Because instead, I was so ashamed of my body, and I felt like something was wrong with me, that I didn't tell anyone I miscarried for a year.
Wow.
And I had to go, and I had to go to my friends' baby showers that had their babies due the same week, and that I had my due date. I had to go to their baby showers and act like I was totally fine and happy, which I was, but I also wasn't.
Right.
And yeah, it was really difficult. And like I said, that I got the news around Thanksgiving. I had to go to Thanksgiving dinner with my extended family and act like I was fine. Wow. When really I was just like sick to my stomach in so many ways. And yeah, I really wish, because when I had my next loss, like everyone knew, and I needed that space around me of support.
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel like this rule needs to be kind of either thrown out or rewritten in a way, because people do need that space to grieve and get the comfort and support that they need, and not just be expected to pick themselves up and be fine when you're not.
Yes, absolutely.
So then how long after that loss did you conceive again?
We got pregnant, I want to say maybe 6 to 8 months later, we got pregnant again. And I was excited, but also absolutely terrified. my endocrinologist had actually said my numbers were not completely safe to conceive yet.
Wow.
And then I actually had just seen her like a week before, and she gave me that warning and said, you know, call me if you get a positive test. So I called my husband. He was away on a work trip. I told him, and then I immediately hung up and called the doctor. Mm-hmm. And she was amazing. She upped all my meds. She got everything managed within the first month. Mm-hmm. But it was really scary, because I was wondering, am I just setting myself up for another miscarriage?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's, you want to be excited, but there's this fear and anxiety that I'm sure is really getting in the way, and rightfully so.
Yeah. And then my OB was really supportive. They did weekly blood draws, or I guess every 48 hours, to check my HCG levels. Wow. That they were doubling. And so I got that done. They put me on extra progesterone. So I felt really supported for that first trimester. Like, as much as I could control, I felt like I had that.
Yeah.
And then once we reached that 12 week mark, and then 13 weeks, I mean, we were like, oh, okay, we got this. Like, we're good now.
So was that, did you announce this pregnancy?
Yes. So once we hit the 12 week mark, we announced it to our friends and family. And, you know, again, that idea of waiting just doesn't make sense to me now. And then with my school, they knew I was pregnant, I think, super early on, because I was drinking ginger ale and eating crackers like every morning at 7 a.m. Yeah. So when I finally told them, I was probably closer, maybe like 16 weeks along, and they were like cheering and saying like, finally, like, we're wondering when you're going to say.
And how was the pregnancy overall?
It was great. I mean, it was very normal and typical. Everything, every week, I seemed to be hitting all the right milestones. And, you know, it was just exciting. I mean, with every progressing week, we got more stuff done around the house. We got the nursery underway. We had the baby shower, bought a new car.
Wow.
My students even brought in like baby gifts for me. I mean, it was, you know, it was real. I mean, we just thought there was no other ending other than bringing a baby home from the hospital.
Of course, absolutely. Because that's what's supposed to happen. I mean, that's what happens to most people. So then you're nearing the end of your pregnancy, and the unimaginable happens. So what went wrong? Take me through those moments.
All right. So this is where, even almost 6 years later, I still have a lot of guilt. But I do realize that I made the decisions that I did with the limited amount of information I had. Mm-hmm. I'm much more well-informed now. So I just have to know that I can't change the past. And that's because I did not know how to do my kicks properly. I didn't know how to count them properly. So I was almost 34 weeks along, and it was a Saturday morning, and there was decreased movement. And, you know, our son was just not moving very much. And he was usually extremely active. So I drank some orange juice. I laid on my side for an hour and I was just crying. My husband was like, "It's fine, you know, like just relax. Like, I'm sure everything's fine." So then, I counted 10 kicks or movements in, that time frame. It was much slower, but I thought he hit the requirement. Like, everything must be fine. So that was Saturday. Sunday, I just felt a little bit off, but I thought, like, it was just third trimester fatigue.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of had like a stomach ache, but I mean, there's always like indigestion in third trimester. Right. So I ignored it. Monday morning, I went to work, and gosh, around maybe like 9 a.m, I started having really terrible back pain. And I thought, okay, I'm really petite. Maybe this is just my body. Cause I was having like sciatica pain and different things. I kept thinking everything may be normal.
Right.
So I went through the entire school day like that. And it ended up being preterm labor. I was having back labor.
Wow.
Yeah. So I went to the OB because I called them, said I was having back pain. They said, come in, get checked out. So I went after school had ended, and they hooked me up to the NST, and my son failed it. So they gave me a lollipop and they said, "Here's some sugar. Maybe he's sleeping. Like, let's wake him up a little bit." He failed it again. So the midwife, she looked a little bit nervous, but they know how anxious I am. So that she was trying to stay calm. And she said, we think you should just go to the hospital and get checked out. So I called my husband. He doesn't work too far away. I said, meet me at the hospital. I'm having contractions. Baby isn't moving. You want me to get checked out? So he announced to everyone in his office that, he might be meeting his son today. He wasn't sure, but he was like, this might be it. So he was over the moon, all excited.
And when you called him to tell him you're going to the hospital, did you know the gravity of the situation at that point?
So I was absolutely terrified. I was not excited whatsoever, but I didn't know how serious it was. Mm-hmm. But I just had this feeling like all weekend that something was off, like something didn't seem right. And then I felt like all of these things were confirming my fears. So we went to the hospital, continued monitoring. And one good thing is that my OB and midwives were at the hospital on call. So I was able to see them.
Great.
And yeah, so it was nice to have familiar faces. So kept failing the NSTs. And then the stronger my contractions got, the less his heart was tolerating them. So normally, the contraction happens and then the baby's heart may decelerate for a second, but will go back up. Mm-hmm. And his was not really going back up. So I end up getting a biophysical profile ultrasound. And that was when I knew things were really serious, because I was excited to be able to see my son on the screen.
Yeah.
But I was watching the doctors, or the ultrasound technician, as she was going through and doing the checklist. And I realized he was not taking his breaths. He was not moving. Oh. He and she just looked so concerned and quiet. Ugh. And I was like, okay, something's not right. And then right after that, my midwife said, we're going to do an emergency C-section. We think he's going to be safer on the outside. We think he needs some care from the NICU. We're going to take him out.
Wow. So what goes through your mind at that point?
I started crying. I'm terrified. My husband's trying to calm me down and say, like, we'll get to meet him. Like, you know, it'll be okay. And everything seemed to be a blur after that. It was really fast. We get into the OR and my husband can't be in there. So that's really scary while they prep me and by myself. And the NICU team is on standby off to the side. And when my husband finally comes in, he's at like my left side, right at my head, and he's holding my hand. And it felt like immediately, like our son Richard is pulled out and I don't hear any cries. And that was, you know, that's what you see on TV. I mean, the baby comes out and is crying. Yeah. And it seemed like weirdly quiet. And I could hear my midwife and my OB talking to each other about a lot of blood. And they were like, I don't, you know, there's a lot of blood here. I don't know what's going on. And do you think it's a placental abruption? And then I heard, no, her placenta's intact. And I'm thinking, what is happening? I can't see anything. The screen is in front of me. I don't see my son.
Anyone saying anything to you at that point?
Nothing. So the NICU team is off to my left. And I know that my husband was like looking around frantically. And I'm telling him, like, tell me what's going on. But he has no idea. He doesn't know what they're doing. So we actually had a resident in the OR with us. This poor kid, I mean, he was young. And he ended up being the best support person we had.
Wow.
He tried his best to tell us what was happening. And he ended up actually staying with my husband for like the rest of that time and trying to kind of communicate with him and tell him what was happening and what he was watching. But in the OR, I ended up screaming my head off, just telling, you know, for someone to tell me what was happening. And then before I knew it, the NICU team went. I told my husband to go with them. I ended up being like put to sleep. I think I was like panicking too much. And I think they put something to kind of calm me down.
Did they tell you they were doing that?
No. And I do have some anger towards that. And I have communicated that with the doctors in my subsequent pregnancies, that was never to happen again. I mean, on one hand, I can understand that, you know, if I'm panicking, you can't really do the surgery very well. But on the other hand, there was no consent and I didn't know what was happening.
Wow, that's crazy. And the lack of communication makes it so much scarier.
Yes. So I woke up in a recovery room. I don't know how much time had passed. And I was by myself. Mm. But I remember trying to find my phone and within seconds, like two nurses came on either side of me on my bed. They didn't say anything to me. They just wheeled me down the hallway.
Oh my God.
And I had no idea what was happening. And then I ended up going into the NICU. They have like an emergency kind of room that they work in. They wheeled me into that and just everyone was crying and my husband's in there crying and the doctor's shaking her head, like the lead attending from the NICU team. And, just said that Richard had died. Just being like, just going into that situation, no mental preparation. I mean, nothing could ever prepare you for it, but it's just something that just haunts me.
It does not sound like the handling of the situation was done properly. I mean, to wake up after not even knowing you were being put to sleep, that first of all is scary in itself, to wake up in that type of state and be so confused and out of it and where am I and what just happened. And then it's like it's like a nightmare. You're being wheeled down a hallway with no one telling you why or where you're going. And then to be brought into a room with no preparation. I mean, I can't imagine the thoughts that must have been racing through your head as you're trying to put pieces together and figure out, first of all, where am I? I just woke up in this room that I didn't know I was going to be in, and what's going on?
Yeah, and where is everyone? Because all I wanted was my husband and my son. I was like, where is, like, I don't understand. And, you know, from the surgery, from all of the, you know, drugs that you're on, and, you know, I was really out of it. Like, I just was not, I mean, right now things are kind of like blurry and I have pictures to kind of piece things together. But I do remember the doctor asking if I wanted to hold Richard. And I remember all of that. And, you know, and then she, I remember seeing her taking pictures. So the hospital did take pictures and printed them for us and created like a memory box. But yeah, so with, you know, you mentioned like the mishandling of things, I ended up joining a parent panel at this hospital because they have a perinatal bereavement program that actually began shortly before my loss. Wow. So I joined that parent panel to kind of communicate on how they can do things better.
That's amazing. And I'm sure you had a lot of really insightful feedback.
Yes, yes. And I had a lot of conversations with my OB and all of those doctors and midwives, and really advocating for myself for my future birth plans.
My goodness, what an absolute nightmare. That no one should ever have to live through. It's just it's the worst thing. So what happened? What went wrong? Why didn't Richard make it?
So it turns out that he ended up having a fetal maternal hemorrhage, which is incredibly rare. It's only maybe 1 in 200,000. Wow. And a lot of times it's caused from some kind of trauma, like maybe a car accident or a really big fall. But in my case, there was nothing. There was no reason for it. It just happened. And basically what that kind of hemorrhage is that typically so Richard started bleeding out. So he was hemorrhaging and losing his blood. And instead of my placenta acting as a barrier, it passed through the placenta into my bloodstream.
Wow.
So he had lost close to 200 milliliters of blood, I guess. Yeah, basically his entire, you know, blood volume. And that was why there was decreased movement over the weekend. That was why I had a stomach ache. I wasn't feeling well because I had his blood in my body. And then, you know, I was feeling like sluggish, and all of these were just very, very subtle signs of what was happening. Because normally there aren't really big traumatic signs to show that a hemorrhage is happening. So he had Rh positive blood and I have Rh negative blood. So when they drew my blood after delivery, they drew his blood. So that's how much was in my body.
Oh my goodness. Wow. And does your body just reabsorb it, or what happens? I mean, how does that affect you?
It ended up creating a lot of issues for my future pregnancies. So typically when someone is Rh negative and has a pregnancy, they can just get the Rogam shot early in the third trimester, and that blocks any antibodies from mixing.
Sure.
So it protects the baby, because without the Rogam shot, what happens is that so I'll give my example is my red blood cells would attack the baby's red blood cells and deplete them.
Wow.
So that's what happens without the Rogam shot. So the hospital had never seen this big of a loss before of a, you know, and the mixing, and it was, they tried to calculate, and I don't have any anger towards this because I recognize that it was a very unusual situation.
Yeah.
But they didn't give me enough Rogam. So the blood continued to mix in my body, and it ended up that I have iso-immunized pregnancies. So Rogam no longer works for my body. And anytime I have an Rh positive baby, they're at high risk for anemia because my body will attack theirs.
Wow. That's crazy and something you definitely don't hear about.
No, it's really rare because typically Rogam is fine. I mean, it's an amazing shot that you can get and it works incredibly well. So those complications are really rare.
Oh my goodness. I know you had subsequent pregnancies after this one, which I want to talk about, but were you able to spend time with Richard?
I'm so glad you asked this question because a lot of people don't. We did. So I know that we were in that NICU room. We spent time with him. We held him. And I remember feeling such conflicting emotions watching my husband hold our son because it was a moment I wanted to see for so long. And it was like, it was beautiful, but also so incredibly heartbreaking. And, you know, when you lose a baby, I mean, you lose every possible dream you ever had for that child. Mm. And I felt like I could see as my husband held him just everything they could have had together. And it was just really heartbreaking. And I remember when I held him, just looked at him and just thought, how could he be gone? Like, how could he be dead? Like, he's perfect. Like, he's beautiful. And he had a full head of black hair. And he was just, he just looked like he was sleeping. And I couldn't believe it. It was just completely shocking. And then the hospital did bring him back in the following day so we could spend time with him, which was really just like a few hours later because we had delivered him close to midnight. They brought him in the next morning and we spent some more time with him and held him and took some more pictures.
I'm glad that you at least were given that time, which is trauma in itself, but it's a different type of trauma, I imagine.
Yeah, and I was really grateful that the hospital staff did kind of push me to spend some time with him, because there is, like, especially a couple hours later, I mean, when the reality really sets in and you think, like, no, this is really like my dead son that's here in the room. And it's just, even just saying it doesn't sound real. But, you know, it's just, it's so many conflicting emotions. And I still wish I had spent more time with him. There's never enough time.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I am thankful that the hospital is like, no, you should bring him back in, like, spend some more time with him. Like, we will do anything that you need.
It's such a not normal experience. And there is no, you know, guidebook for how to deal with it. And at least given that guidance so that there's not that sense of regret of, I should have spent the time that I had with him. Did you have a burial for, or a, you know, a ceremony in honoring for him?
So we didn't have a ceremony. We had him cremated. We actually, I don't know if I've really said this publicly. So this might be the first time. My husband and I gave each other onesies as a gift when we announced the pregnancy. Like, we were sharing with each other, and it had this song lyric on it from our wedding song by the band Sleeping at Last. And it says, "You are meant for amazing things." So that's a quote that we really associate with Richard, and it really informs a lot of my advocacy work. But we had him dressed in that onesie when he was cremated, so that he would have it with him. But we had him cremated, and then we have like a blue heart urn that we keep in our living room next to some other things to kind of remember him.
Oh, that's very special. How do you go back to work, go back to life after this type of immense heartbreak?
I really felt like I had to teach myself how to socialize again and talk with people and smile, even if it wasn't real. I felt like I had to kind of go through all of that again. But in the immediate aftermath, especially recovering from the C-section, I couldn't get out of bed. I completely shut down. I wasn't eating. I just slept all day long. And that was hard because my husband is more of a doer. He was doing yard work. He's doing stuff around the house. He's taking care of me. And it did cause some friction because we were just grieving very differently.
Yes.
And I mean, he really took care of me and taking care of himself. I mean, it was a really big, big stressor, I think, for both of us. So that was the first couple of weeks. And then, so I had Richard in May. So I took the rest of the school year off. So the next 6 weeks, I didn't return to work. And then over the summer, starting the first week of July, I actually took a summer job with the custodial staff at my work and cleaned classrooms all summer.
Wow.
So I thought, you know what? I'm going to get out of this house because I can't sit here anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't have anything else to do. And at least I could do some work that won't really require a lot of thought.
Yeah.
And I can kind of practice being around people again before, especially being in the school again, getting comfortable again before I have to see everyone in September. And that was the best decision I made. Wow. They were wonderful. They were so accepting and they didn't push me to tell my story. And they also just treated me like Jackie. Like it was nice to joke around and not be constantly reminded even more of what I didn't have.
Yes. That's so smart and courageous to push yourself to go get a job that normally that's your time off. You know, you're a teacher, you get summers off, and to push yourself because you knew in the end it was the better move to be able to start readjusting back to being around people before you had to really put your face on. Sounds like,
yes.
What a smart, strong decision.
Not an easy one, but definitely a good one I ended up making.
How do you honor Richard?
There's a couple of things. So we have just in our house, like different things around the house that are pretty subtle, I think, but just little things that remind me of him. On his birthday, we do random acts of kindness. So we have cards made up and we associate Batman with him. We just always thought that he would be a big Batman fan, like his dad. So we have cards made up. And we pass those around and we just do really nice things, you know, in his name.
Oh, my goodness. What a way to honor someone. I mean, that was like the best answer. It's so amazing that you're turning it into making other people happy. Is such a beautiful way to honor him.
Yeah, and celebrating birthdays, it's difficult because I know some people like to make cakes for their baby to celebrate the birthday, or I've seen some people at parties, and you know, it was hard to figure out what worked well for us and our family. And I did see another lost mom who did the random acts of kindness, and I'd reached out to her and I said, yeah, I really love this idea. Like, do you mind if I do the same thing? And, you know, she was like, oh, no, of course. But we also have, I'd mentioned the hospital's a perinatal bereavement program, and they have an angel garden with plaques that you can get with your baby's name on it. So since we have them cremated, we don't really have anywhere to visit. Yes. So I'll go and visit the plaque pretty regularly and decorate it for each of the holidays. And, you know, like I bring like, you know, his siblings there now to visit. And so that's been a really a special place to go, and also just to be by myself sometimes and remember him.
Sure. I'm glad that you have that outlet. So you're the living hope for so many families, mine included, for sure. You went on to have two rainbow babies. So what was it like to get pregnant again after losing a child?
It was terrifying, but right after we lost Richard, my husband and I did talk about having more kids. And, you know, I said to him, I said, like, you want to do this again, right? Like, we're on the same page. And he's like, yes, like, I want to have another kid. So we knew that we were on the same page for that. I did go to therapy right after his death. And I wanted to make sure I was in the right mental space to get pregnant again. And I had the right support system, because I know that the extra stress can really affect the baby, and I didn't want that.
Yeah.
So we ended up getting pregnant 8 months later, and it was scary, but very exciting. It was difficult because I was really scared, and it kept being, anytime I talked, I would say, if we bring this baby home, if. And my husband would say, when we bring this baby home, like, you have to shift your mindset. And I didn't want to buy any baby gifts. I said no to a baby shower. I didn't want to get the nursery ready. And I actually went to Disney World with the senior class trip in my school as a chaperone. Oh. And I was about 11 weeks along, and I had already announced to my job, because I was very large at that point, so I couldn't hide it anyway. Mm-hmm. So I went on the class trip, and when I got back, I noticed that the nursery light was on, and I could tell from the front yard, and we had never opened that door in months and months.
Oh my goodness.
So I had a little anxiety of that. And then when I walked inside, the door was open, and my husband had already set up some stuff in there.
Wow.
And he was like, we need to like plan for this baby to come home. Hmm. And that was when the mindset shifted for me, because I wanted to have hope that we would do it, and that this baby would be healthy.
What was it like to have your first daughter placed on your chest for the first time?
Hearing her cry, like, that was all I wanted. Like, I just wanted to hear her cry. And she cried as soon as she came out. They put her right near my chest, and she just reached up and touched my chin. And it was just like this beautiful moment. I was like, oh my gosh, like, she's here, and she's here safely. And it was just an unreal moment. I remember when we drove home from the hospital a few days later, my husband had made a playlist, because he's really into music. So we had a playlist, and it was all these like themed songs for, you know, taking a baby home. And he played that Sleeping at Last song. And I remember sitting in the back with her and just crying, because it just felt, it felt like full circle. Like, yeah, we're finally coming home with a baby in the car seat, in the back seat.
Yes. Oh my gosh. What a moment. It's like I can picture it as like the ending of a movie, you know, like driving, yeah. You know, with the song playing. Totally. And then you had another child. Was that pregnancy as scary? I mean, now you actually had a whole pregnancy that, you know, had ups and downs, but ended in what it's supposed to end in. What was the second pregnancy like?
It was much more chaotic, unfortunately. So with an isoimmunized pregnancy, they get worse with each one. So typically the first one, which is my first daughter, it's fine. And then after that, it gets a little bit worse. So I was told there was like an 80% chance that our next daughter would be fine, like same kind of pregnancy. Everything seemed to happen a bit quicker with her. So with our youngest, it was in the, I guess, like middle of the second trimester where there were some worrying signs of anemia. So they said, you know, everything looks fine, but we're going to monitor you even more. So it was a lot of ultrasounds. I went to the hospital anytime I was worried. She ended up being fine every time. But we made it to, it was around Christmas, about 32 weeks. And the doctors were like, I don't know how much longer you're going to go because she's showing some signs of anemia. Like, we might have to do a blood transfusion through the cord to the baby. And that was like my big fear. I didn't want to get to that point, but they were like, we're going to put off on it. You know, we're going to keep monitoring you. I ended up going to a hospital in Philadelphia, so in the next state, because they wanted me closer to like the top doctors and an OR in case anything needed to be done. Oh, so we ended up making it to 34 weeks. And they said, okay, like, you know, one final ultrasound, they said, you're having her today. Like, you're going to go to the hospital and she's going to be delivered today. She's showing signs of anemia. Like, she needs to come out. I thought, okay, 34 weeks. Richard was 34 weeks, just about. I know that he was a good size. I know that he, you know, he weighed about 5 pounds. So I had an idea of what she might look like. I still had the same, I had chosen my team for the C-section. So I had the same midwife for all three of my deliveries.
Wow.
I still keep in touch with her and she is just an amazing human being. So I'm talking with her and 34 weeks, you need a NICU bed. And they told me that there was no room in the NICU. I could deliver at the hospital, but she would have to be taken to another hospital.
Oh my gosh.
And I thought, what am I going to do? Like, I want to be at the same hospital. I need to have her in that NICU. So by some miracle, they found a bed for her and I was able to deliver at the hospital I wanted. Yeah, when she was born, it was definitely a little bit crazier and it was a lot of flashbacks for me because the NICU team is in there, they're doing their stuff. And I did tell my doctors, I was like, you are not going to put me to sleep. You're going to communicate with me and tell me exactly what's happening. Like, I am going to be aware of everything. And they were great. I felt really supported. So she ended up needing a month in the NICU.
Wow.
She needed a few blood transfusions, some oxygen since she was early. And she was great. I mean, now she's almost two and you would never know she was ever a preemie or a NICU baby. I mean, she's amazing. But she needed that extra month of support.
Yeah. And it sounds like, you know, if anything that came out of your horrible trauma with Richard, at least now you were able to communicate what you needed the next times, you know, because it wasn't what you needed the first time.
Yeah, I definitely learned how to be an advocate for myself because before I never wanted to bother anyone. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be an annoying patient. But after that, I thought, no, it's my body. My baby, I know what I need. I know what I need to help me mentally, you know, get through pregnancy after loss. And they were great with it. You know, they listened to me. I did feel heard and validated. Actually, with the NICU team, what was extra comforting was that I got to meet everyone who helped to try to save Richard's life.
Wow.
I met all of the doctors and they remembered us. They remembered his name. And it was really amazing to see the same doctors that tried to care for him take care of our daughter. Oh. And I think for some of them, it was really healing as well to kind of see that kind of full circle. Yeah.
Oh, that's so, because you don't always get the same team. So that's, I mean, it's healing for you, but I definitely can see how that would be healing for them too, to get that chance to send you home with a healthy baby.
Yeah, it ended up being a really, it was difficult to be in the NICU because I had to actually go by the room every single day that we had lost him in. And that was really triggering for me. But it was really nice to be able to walk past that room and go and see my daughter.
So Jackie, what can you say to other families who are struggling with their grief and their loss that can give them a sense of comfort and a sense of hope for the future?
I think the first thing would be to really learn not to blame yourself for anything that happens, because there are so many things in pregnancy that are completely out of our control. There's only so much that we can do. And just to learn that things happened, but it was never your fault, and to let go of that guilt and shame. And also to allow yourself to feel however it is that you feel, and not let anyone else dictate that. You know, if you are having a rough day, that's okay. If you find a day that you didn't cry and that you smiled, that's okay too. You don't have to feel guilty about that. You know, just go day to day and really address your emotions and just allow yourself to feel it.
Yes, 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 yes. That's is so important. Even the notion of I feel guilty because I'm smiling is that's so real. And that's so unfair that there needs to be that guilt for having a good day. After experiencing grief and loss at that extreme level, like, you're allowed to have good days too.
Yeah. And I remember feeling so confused because I felt like if I was sad, I felt more connected to Richard, because all I knew was that sadness and grief and crying. And then when I started smiling again, I was like, wait, does this mean that I'm like forgetting about him? And that did take a while to come to terms with and realize that, you know, grief and happiness can coexist. Hmm.
Yeah, it is such a confusing, that is such a confusing feeling. And you're supposed to be, you know, quote unquote, supposed to be sad, and learning how to let yourself be happy. And that doesn't mean that you're giving up on the loss or that you've moved on. You know, this is not something that you ever just move on from. It's always a part of you. It's always a part of your story. It's just that life gets bigger around you.
I will say that one thing that I have started doing over the last, I guess, maybe 8 months. So I started an organization called Start Healing Together, and I focus on supporting educators like myself, who have gone through pregnancy loss and infertility, and, you know, really try to ensure that their rights are advocated for.
Yes. Yes. That's so amazing that you were able to turn this into not just healing yourself, but healing other people as well. And that's really inspiring. And thank you for doing that. I mean, it's one thing to just go through a loss and trauma and grief and then just kind of go back to your day to day, but you're taking it and you're using it to propel yourself and other people with you. And that's not an easy thing to do. And I really, truly appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a way to, I feel like I always had two identities, like my teacher self and then Richard's mom. So I feel like this is the way that I'm kind of bringing them together.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much for all that you're doing and also for coming on and sharing your story. I'm so sorry for your loss. I wish you the best of luck and thank you for all that you're doing with Start Healing Together and just being spreading kindness, which we definitely need more of these days.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Unexpecting. Join our community by following us on Instagram at Unexpecting Podcast. If you'd like to share your story on our show, email us at unexpectingpodcast@gmail.com. You can support this podcast by visiting anchor.fm/unexpecting. Be kind to yourself, be patient, and remember, today's teardrops are tomorrow's rainbows. Take care.